IFPRI Policy Seminar 2013 Global Hunger Index Launch Event, The Challenge of Hunger, Building Resilience to Achieve Food and Nutrition Security, held on October 18, 2013 in Washington, D.C. Speaker Wolfgang Jaman from Welthungerhilfe.
Thanks, good afternoon. My name is Wolfgang Jaman. I'm the head of German NGO Welthungerhilfe. We're since 8 years partners with Concern Worldwide and IFPRI, this exciting report. We really appreciate this partnership. It's something that brings, I think, the community forward. We exchange both academic results and lessons from the field. And that's what both Cornell and I will be trying this afternoon, to bring in two case studies that illustrate a little bit why we think resilience is one of the key topics that need to be addressed when we talk about hunger and malnutrition. I also appreciate the high turnout this afternoon. I know you have exciting weeks behind you and probably ahead of you as well. We've been launching this Global Hunger Index in a number of, let's say, political gravity centers. We've been in Brussels this week, in London, in Berlin, in places like Ethiopia as well, Addis Ababa. We've been having incredible response, both in terms of the quality of the discussion and the appreciation of, I think, what has been shown by the overall community. Now I think my job is to find the presentation. Oh, I got help. Yeah, thanks for helping me. I was just scared to touch one of those buttons that bring the thing up and down. So. You've heard Derek talk about the problems to define resilience. So we've put one on the wall, which is also part of the Global Hunger Index. Of course, it's a bit of a complicated one. It's not 100% congruent with what maybe others talk about resilience. But I think one of the key issues in community resilience is that it's not just a matter of bouncing back. It's a matter of bouncing back better. The idea is to bring the community into a position that is better than before a shock. So it's not just recovering, it's improving the situation. We have chosen both Haiti and East Africa for particular reasons. Haiti, partly because, of course, we do work there since about 40 years, but we haven't chosen it because it's such a shining example of great work. It's basically an example of how an entire nation, half of an island, and of course subsequently the communities and the individuals live on this island are subdued to the high degree of vulnerability in all kind of aspects. And you've heard Derek talk about the combination of both resilience and vulnerability. What you see here up on the on the slide is, I think, a picture from last year where two major hurricanes follow each other within a few days. And, you know, we all know about the devastating earthquake in 2010, but you also need to know that just in terms of natural disasters, natural hazards, Haiti is one of the most affected regions of the entire globe. In the decade before the earthquake, before 2010, there were about 35 major climatic or natural disasters affecting this island, 35. That is three every year, which, and I'll go to the effects a little bit later, which is just one of the dramatic preconditions that people in Haiti have to live under. Of course, we had the earthquake in 2010 where over 300,000 people lost their lives. 1.8 million people have become homeless because of the earthquake. And of course, it's a nation that also is ranking among the lowest when it comes to stability of government and the ability of a state to address problems. There's about 50% of people living in poverty there, and there's about 80 to 90% living off subsistence in agriculture. So there's very little kind of power to really develop as an individual of a community. Nevertheless, Haiti has improved over time, also in the Global Hunger Index, from 35 to 23. It's still serious, but there's been significant progress over the years, over the decades, since 1990. So that's clearly an encouraging sign. Of course, slightly affected by the earthquake in 2010, but then also the Global Hunger Index again improved after that. What we have here is, again, the three, let's say, major factors of the resilience deficit or vulnerability, if you wish so, which is natural shocks, socio-political stresses, the widespread poverty and continuous food and nutrition insecurity, and then, of course, an emergency economy, an economy that has been made dependent on external aid, and not just, of course, by the aid community, which sometimes does the wrong things. President Clinton himself has admitted that some of the food aid policy has contributed to the dependency. But of course, a lot of, if you wish, guilt is also attributed to the terrible, the dictatorial governments that have ruled and abused and exploited the Haitian nations over the last decades. Here's just an illustration of, you know, the effects of some of the hurricanes that came over the island, and it's as terrible. The loss of life is, of course, the widespread crop destruction. 80%, 70%, 90,000 hectare is one of the major contributing factors why people are so vulnerable on that island. It's incredibly difficult to withstand those shocks. This is another factor that I hadn't mentioned on the three major factors, which is the environmental problems that the island has. The island is almost completely deforested. Thank you. Help me with the appropriate expressions. You can see that you know, over the last decades, the entire country has been made rid of wood, of timber. Basically, it has been sold. Sometimes it's the communities that cut down the remaining trees to get charcoal, something like that. This is the border between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. The border shows the problem. You know, on the one hand, you have one of the poorest nations on the earth. On the other hand, you have a place where many people spend beautiful holidays. There's a lot of overweight, obesity in the Dominican Republic. But it's also happening that I've just spoke to a Haitian colleague of mine, said on the other side of the border, the Dominicans are protecting. They're protecting the forest by the army. The army is actually taking care that natural resources are being protected, which I find is a quite interesting phenomenon. There's also a little bit of a relationship between Dominican Republic and Haiti in a way that some of the arable land in Haiti, which the smallholder farmers cannot sustain because they don't have the money for the agricultural implements or whatnot, are now being in large numbers being procured, being bought by investors from the Dominican Republic. So, you know, the large issue of foreign direct investment or land grab, however you want to call it, it's happening in small scale there as well. And what is happening, the investment comes in the country, the farmers sell their land, they lose their jobs, they maybe get a day job or so, but again, you know, they're losing a little bit more of their ability to withstand any kind of external shock. Here's what we do. Of course, we did work around, and we do work around Port-au-Prince and the west, southwest, where the earthquake has struck most. But the northwest of the country I want to talk about, which had no direct impact by the earthquake. Indirectly, yes, because dozens of thousands of people migrated from the south to the north in the aftermath of the earthquake. This is one of the ways to cope with vulnerability, you know, not just adapt, but transform their lifestyle. They left their home. They were looking for a job up in the north. This is an area which is, again, it's been deforested. It's vulnerable. And we basically launched a large-scale food and nutrition security program. I'm not going to go to all the components, but what you see basically is a program that wasn't designed to create or improve resilience. It was a classical food and nutritional program, and it had a number of factors, road construction, protection of watershed management, for instance. It was addressing, you see that in the middle role, both income and health issues, but also the stabilization of the environment by natural resource management. And also we were trying to adapt the program in the aftermath of any kind of emergency that came to that region, be it hurricanes or droughts or even the immigration or the migration of affected earthquake victims. We had quite an impact actually over the years. We managed to reduce the food deficit during acute crisis, you know, the crisis that Derek mentioned, you know, by about 30 to 50%. We increased household incomes by up to 200%. We had about 5,000 households that were able to improve their food security in a substantive manner. Now, we looked at the program through the lens of resilience because it wasn't designed originally. And we looked at what are the key ingredients that really contributed or maybe that that we forgot about. And I'm mentioning just a few. Addressing the root causes. What we have here is an example of a number of things we did. A lot of infrastructure, you know, you see irrigation systems, you see protection against erosion, and of course we were trying to improve the food security of the farmers by distributing improved seed varieties. This is an example of how we both involved the communities in working with the effects of a disaster, but also prevention of disasters, which is riverbed protection you see on the left-hand side of the slide. A third one was a serious effort to strengthen the community's capacities, but basically by building up local watershed management and natural resource management committees, which basically on the mid to long run could become the nucleus of an organized rural civil society, which is better equipped to collectively mitigate risks. And the fourth one is collaboration with local government and national ministries. You see those four ingredients in the Hunger Index, in the Global Hunger Index. The collaboration with the government is one of the key issues that must not be forgotten. And in a place like Haiti, of course, a government that has been weak and has been weakened by the earthquake, it's one of the even more important ingredients. The outlook, it's not looking terribly bad, actually. We're trying to strengthen the civil society further. I think there's a lot of opportunities to foster resilient, enhancing policy changes, because what we think is it is possible to improve and increase the ability of a community to resist shocks, even in a place like Haiti. Thanks for your attention.